Elise Castle.
Well, Mike Jensen, I have absolutely no butthole dons. We made no mistakes in last week's episode. No one reached out.
I didn't get any messages. Yeah.
Yeah. So kudos.
Should we start with the biggest butthole of all time?
Us. We are the biggest butthole. No. So, okay. Here's the thing.
Because I have some notes on it, too. So you start. We'll
I'm just saying that we were wrong. And I'm not blaming our listener who wrote to us because, like the writer's room who refuses to do any continuity checks, we didn't either. So the thing is, the basic thing is that when he runs into Carrie on the street, he being Aiden, in the original series, he just has Tate. And he doesn't mention the others until the second film, correct?
Yes, okay. Correct.
Yeah, so you guys, thank you for reaching out to me and telling us, because it is, like, what we ask for, but, like, the amount of message, we've never gotten this many messages. So it was actually exciting to be like, oh, wow, a lot of people still listen to us. I have my personal website. I got an alert saying, like, you had, like, 85 times the visits to your website. And I'm like, am I famous? Like, am I being canceled? What's happening? And then I got messages to my personal email. So I think, thank you guys for listening.
So what I want to say about this, a couple things. First of all, I didn't hear this from you. Like, I heard this from you when we talked, but I had already read on more than one site about this mistake. So it's just wild to me that, like, we didn't come up with this. We were told this by multiple sources. And then, correct, we did not go back and check, which we should have done. And the funny thing is, I literally watched To Market, like, a week and a half ago. Like, I had just seen the episode where we meet Tate as a baby. So it's funny that it wasn't fresh enough in my mind that he only mentions Tate. I will say that I also then went and watched not the entire Sex and the City 2 movie, but I watched all of the interactions with Aiden. And yes, this is where he mentions Homer, Wyatt, and Tate. And he says them in that order. And I don't know why he says them in that order. I don't know why there's a world in which you would mention your middle child, your youngest child, and then your oldest child. Maybe it's the order they are in the picture that he's showing to her. But anyways, I just think it's funny on that respect as well.
Well, and I also think there's still inconsistency with it, because Market to Market came out in 2003. And if he had that little baby, that baby is probably around, like, I don't know, 9 months, which means, I mean, Tate, I guess, would be around 21 at this point. But, like, the other kids, the movie came out in 2010. So if he already had those kids, I don't know how accurate those ages would be, but maybe.
Anyways, so thank you for correcting us.
And thank you for listening. That was, like, my biggest thing. I'm like, wow, we have a lot of
people are listening. We also did make a point last week of, like, we can be wrong, reach out. So I think we also, like, encouraged people.
Yes.
As far as that goes, which I stand by it. Like, we love hearing the stuff. I will also say, so I actually have a couple of buttholes, which I love saying.
Yeah, tell me about them.
So one of them is so funny because in the last episode, I make a point of, like, Shu doesn't want to sleep on Carrie's head. Legitimately, if it wasn't that night, it was the next night that I was hanging out with our friend Annabelle, who clearly has not caught up watching or listening. And she mentioned how so often she wakes up and her cat Beaches is on her head. So I think that's hilarious that it happened in that order. I also think it's really, really funny that at some point I'm telling future Annabelle that she's going to send me a text that says, you know that Beach is like sleeping on my head. And then I will later get a text that goes, oh, you covered it in the next episode. So I'm predicting the future there. My other thing that I want to bring up, because it was such a confusing moment for me, was you talking about Marge Simpson dying. And I bring it up because I watch The Simpsons. I watch it every Monday morning that it comes out on a Sunday night. And I'm like, and they've been off the air for, like, their season wrapped up a while ago. And I didn't know what we were talking about. So this was an internet thing. This was picked up by the internet that Marge died. It didn't actually happen on the show.
Oh.
There's a thing on an episode where there's, like, a flash forward to Lisa and Bart being grownups. And it shows Marge in heaven watching them have a moment. So how do I not know this happened when I watched the show? So that was all. I just wanted to clear that up.
And
really
was
quickly.
Like that the date that it was on the flash forward, maybe?
I think it was just the idea that, like, we at some point Marge is going to die. But it's not that she died on the show. It's okay. That, like, in the future, she will at some point, you know, we will all
spoiler
die.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. And also, I guess a little butthole for me. Today is July 5th. Yesterday was the 4th of July, which is also my anniversary. So my boyfriend and I went to Brighton Beach, but then walked to Coney Island where we saw Paul's daughter, not like a person, but the restaurant, which is where Steve works. And Brady did not ride by, which I thought was kind of rude.
Disappointing.
Yeah. But that's all. It's still there.
So let's get into the episode now. So we're here to talk about Silent Mode. This debuted July 3rd, 2025, directed by Julie Rottenberg. This is written by Susan Fales Hill. And it's she wrote on the first two episodes of season two. I just have noticed that I don't do this as much on the newer episodes, so I do kind of want to give a little bit of context if we're people that we don't know as well that work on the show. She wrote for the original Cosby Show. She also wrote for A Different World, and she also wrote on a short-lived series called CPW, and that was a Darren Star show back in the day. Like, it was in the 90s. Like, I remember it happening. I feel like there was a song from it, like, How Do You Talk to an Angel or something like that. I think it was about a band. Anyways, that's all. So that's our connection there. We start off with Lilies of the Valley. So I guess that's what they've planted in her garden.
Okay.
And she's never had mutton before. So it's a rainy night and we're having dinner down at Duncan's place.
It feels weird for it to be raining in this Sex and the City world. And I don't know why, but I was like, this is interesting.
And they talk about in the writer's room how, and I guess this is a duh, but like this backyard is a set. Like this backyard is indoors somewhere. And the idea that like when you write, like the one of the strongest decisions a writer can make is writing the word raining because it just involves so much production. Mm-hmm. And so like this set is elevated because the rain has to go somewhere. Just those little things that like I don't really think about when I'm watching a TV show. And he was going to take her to a proper meal, but he's been banging away at Margaret Thatcher every night.
Yeah. And I like something I like that he said is my stew isn't meant for others, just for me, when he's talking about his stew, because I think that is like, there's so many things that we make to eat that we love, but other people we probably wouldn't serve it to.
Yeah, there's also probably a metaphor there.
Oh, his stew is his weed, you think?
I don't know. And, you know, he wants an outside female eye, and we get sort of a she'll read his if he'll read hers. And this is a big deal. Like, sharing work with someone is a very, sensitive place. And I do want to say that I guess if he just wants to know if his tone, because I don't know what Carrie will have to offer as far as Margaret Thatcher goes, and I don't know what he'll have to offer as far as like romantic fiction goes. But I suppose if we're just coming from a writing style, I guess I get that.
Well, she does say, don't think of it as great expectations. Think of it as lower your expectations. I will say that when our friend Eric Bernat was writing his book, The Dancer, which is available for you all to purchase on Amazon.
And it's an amazing book. It's so good.
If you love like crime and true crime and history and jumping decades, this book is
and
for
New
you.
York history, and like New York gay history. New York history. Yeah. It is fascinatingly written. It's so good.
Yeah, but anyway, it's called The Dancer. It's by Eric Bernat. It's available on Amazon. All of that to say that he would give me parts, like pages of his book to read while he was writing it. And I feel very special.
And on the phone, it was the worst meal of her life. I don't think that acid reflux of the lambs is a terribly funny joke, but she's very amused by it.
And she is dealing with stomach issues. She needs Tums. I'm also dealing with stomach issues, Carrie. We are friends. What else I got from this conversation was that she's talking to Aiden. She's talking about Duncan. So Duncan's not a secret.
Right. He's not a secret. And in fact, she's mentioned to him before, even though he doesn't remember it.
And there's something very small, but she looks at a tube of what could be like Aquaphor or Vaseline or lotion. And she looks at the top seam, which you may not know this, but on cosmetics and lotion, especially, that's where they put the expiration date. And she throws it away. And it just doesn't feel very Carrie to me. Like, I feel like Carrie would keep everything and have like a used Vaseline and say, oh, this won't go bad. I don't know.
And he's coming up because Wyatt is doing a wilderness program for a week.
Mm-hmm. And Wyatt picked it out himself.
Yeah. So this seems like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to become a little confusing. But in this moment, we think this is a good thing. And now we're back with the creepy dogs.
Yeah. Miranda wakes up. They're just staring at her. We find out she's been there for 3 days. Seema may have found her an apartment.
And I know that Joy is teasing, but I don't love it. And I feel like I'm being very contrarian. I'm going to end up loving this episode, but there are things that happen along the way. I don't think that I could date Joy. That's all. I'm just going to say that. Like, everything is a joke to her. And I know it's supposed to be, like, charming and funny. But for me, I'm like, I need you to stop joking.
Well, I also think more than that, I think Joy is very... I don't think Joy, and we'll find out she really hasn't, been in a ton of relationships. And I think she's pretty immature and doesn't necessarily know how to act in them. So these are like her defenses.
Yeah, and I can see that.
You can see how awkward, we've seen how awkward she is socially. So I think that's a lot of it. And that's not uncommon. Like, I myself have some of these traits, and I think that... So basically, you're not going to date me. But I can see her being very successful at what she does and then also not knowing how to be a human.
Right. Yeah, I get that. And Miranda would like for Joy to meet Brady. And she sort of asks what the story is with the name. And all that Miranda says is that he's named after his dad's last name. And it's like, oh, much too much information, which I know is a joke. But once again, I'm like... Not everything has to be a joke.
How do you think babies are made, Joy? Yeah. Yeah. And also, where's Steve?
Well, he's not going to be at a funeral.
I know. We will say that.
And now we're outside Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. I know that not everyone cares about addresses. I've never been to this location. This is Midtown / Upper East Side-ish, 1275 York between 67 and 68. York is a block east past First. Once again, I know not everyone cares about that, but I do think it's funny. I'd love to know the history of the naming of that. We have avenues that are all numbers, and then it's like, oh, we went too far east. This one's called York.
I mean, it's the same with the Upper West Side. It's like, oh, we went too far west. We call this West End.
Yeah, it's true. It is true.
Because past York, we have East End Avenue.
Is there another one? Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I've probably been that far because I've been all the way to the water before.
If you've been to Carl Schurz Park, it's past East End Avenue. So, yeah. And she runs into Bitsy. And Bitsy's like, why are you here? And Charlotte's like, I don't know anyone with the big C. I'm just volunteering.
Should I volunteer? I don't think that they need any volunteers. Yeah.
And I thought Charlotte was being super smart in this moment and thinking like, how can I get Bitsy out of here and forgetting about it? So she says, all right, I'll see you next week at the tea time at Tiffany's event. Uh-oh, Bitsy doesn't know about it. And I thought this was like a plan where Charlotte just made up an event.
Gotcha.
That Bitsy wasn't actually invited to. To get Bitsy mad.
Right. This is an example of something apparently that happened in real life to one of the writers on the show. And I feel like I've been in situations like this before, too, where you're like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. And then they don't know what you're talking about. And you're like, oh, I guess I shouldn't have mentioned that. Because, yeah, she hasn't been invited to this. And we have a mention of that Bitsy bought the Schlumberger parrot brooch right after the Beyonce ad. And I did look this up. I remember this ad happening.
Before the Beyonce ad.
She bought it. I think she said that she bought it right after.
Oh, okay.
I think. And yeah, I did look up the ad, and it's I believe it is actually Jay-Z has the brooch.
Well, and these have actually been at Tiffany before Beyonce and Jay-Z. They've been there since like the 50s. And they're expensive. They're like $12,000.
$12,000 minimum. They're like $12,000 to $50,000.
I think it's like Schlumberger is what she said.
Schlumberger.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was the date night ad. Anyways, Bitsy's going to send the manager her purchase totals for last year.
Yeah. And then I wrote, Charlotte made this up because I thought this was great.
So we have a quick cut to Seema listening to Touch Me in the Morning by Diana Ross.
And I immediately knew that she was turning onto 40th Street between Lexington and 3rd because I go to what I lovingly call brain camp, which is therapy, on this exact street. I was watching it with Mark and I was like, wait, this is brain camp. And I was like, pause it. And because I know that corner, like the FedEx, the Starbucks, that bar that's right there.
That's so great that you knew that because I made the choice of Mike, don't get in your Google map and try to find this corner. And I'm so glad that I didn't because you knew where it was.
I know exactly where it is. Yeah. Or maybe Seema is going to join group therapy with me.
Let me know if she's there next week.
Yeah.
And she never thought this day would come, Rocco or Rocco. I think she sort of says it like Rocco.
Yeah, she's like Rocco.
But she wants to make sure that he takes the vanity plates. I do think it's interesting that it's not her car, but it is her license plates. I don't 100% know how that works.
And I also think it's interesting that he, like, is she saying, because she doesn't really give him instructions. She just says, like, that the firm paid for this lease So is she telling him to return it to the dealership and take care of everything? Like, I'm not really sure.
Confused. But he doesn't say a word. And don't get out. It'll be easier this way. And now we get to a whisper listing.
Okay, let's talk about it.
And it's a beautiful apartment. This is one of those things also that blows my mind a little bit, where I just assume they found an apartment. They built this apartment. Like, this is a set they built, which makes my head hurt a little bit that, like, we built this whole thing for this scene. I wonder if we'll, I guess maybe we'll have it in the future as Miranda's apartment.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume so because, spoiler alert, she ends up wanting it. Yeah, a whisper listing, those are listings that I guess are just not yet listed.
That you just know as a real estate that, like, this is something coming up. And I guess you also then know ahead of time that the owners are asking for $150 over asking. And Miranda doesn't believe in that. She won't be part of the Manhattan real estate problem.
Yeah, and my apartment was a whisper listing, technically.
Someone whispered it to you?
Yeah, we were looking at another apartment and she's like, and I said, okay, I'll take it.
And she's like, shh, quiet. It's a whisper listing.
Yeah, you can't yell about it.
And it's not for her. It's on principle. And I don't know. And then we have the yappy dogs next door. So it's not actually perfect.
And I do get it, though. I think that's outrageous to say we're going to price this apartment at $100,000. But if you want to pay more, because then it is just giving leverage to people that have unlimited funds.
Yeah, I guess so. And she believes in SEMA. SEMA works in real estate, not unreal estate. Haha.
Okay.
And now we're discussing options with Harry, sort of radiation versus surgery and long-term bowel versus long-term erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, it's 98% curable. And Harry ends up thinking surgery over chemo. And Charlotte is just terrified, but everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, and I guess the idea here is that we have a Harry who is very concerned, so we have to have a Charlotte who acts not concerned, that we're kind of playing the both sides of that. And we get a, you know, quick pan up Giuseppe's penis.
Yeah. Hey, he's up here. Welcome to my world, men. No, I don't. I actually don't have that problem. No one's staring at the nearly bees. And Carrie brings over an interesting cappuccino order, half skim, half oat.
And she's exhausted.
But that's, like, interesting to me. Why would you choose half of the barely dairy milk and half oat? I don't know.
I don't know. Probably just to have a funny line. And SEMA came through and we get quickly to Harry's calling Charlotte and she's going to awkwardly take it over there. This is once again, Charlotte over explaining.
Yeah, she's going to take it outside because he's just saying hi.
Right.
Miranda wants to make sure Joy can bring her dogs.
I was confused about this as well because they're not getting an apartment together. But is Miranda looking to a future where they might live together? In which case, couldn't she just move in with Joy?
I mean, I think in the world where you are in that infatuation, giddy honeymoon phase,
sure,
you don't want anything to ruin it, so right. Even though it's outrageous to be planning your new home around someone that you've only been dating for probably 3 weeks at this point.
Right. Yeah, I guess I forget what love feels like sometimes. And we're going to find out that Joy is meeting Brady on Friday. I do like Carrie's thing of, like, when am I going to meet Joy?
Yeah. And I like that Carrie said, fine, you like Brady more than me, which is funny to me.
Very funny. I enjoy that a lot. And basically SEMA says that Miranda has until Friday at 5 to make a choice. And now we're in editing and Chauncey's been harassing Lisa all week. And I will say that Marion has the line of big cojones for someone named Chauncey. And I wrote, that's an interesting thing for someone named Marion to say.
Well, and the only reason I thought the exact same thing, and the only reason I bring it up is because the writers have made such a big deal about Marion having that name. You know, it wouldn't be my initial thoughts. I would never personally be like, oh, that name is feminine or that name isn't. But the fact that the writers made that distinction, I thought right. That was an interesting line. Yeah, and Lisa keeps putting him on silent mode, which is important. And Marion wants to put people on silent mode, but not Lisa.
Not Lisa, and Lisa likes hearing that. And now we have a car pulling up outside Carrie's, and it's Aiden, and this is where we're going to get the pebble throwing that we saw in the teaser.
Yeah, and he throws it, and he breaks the window, and he has a very intense scream. Can you just insert it here?
I actually really liked it because it felt very realistic. Like, his horror felt really real to me, but it is a very intense reaction that he has. And we get to him picking up glass and sort of like, it's our thing, and Carrie's saying, we need a new thing. And she sort of lists all the things that these windows survived.
I summarized it by just saying, Carrie explains that the window has survived biblical times. Like, because she's like naming all these historical events that the window has seen.
And you can't replace that glass. It makes rainbows and you're making me feel worse. And I did have a thing with Carrie here where I'm like, Carrie, maybe bring it down a notch.
Well, Aiden says something about hiring a glazier to fix it. How do people just know these words? Like, how does someone know what one who does that is called?
I think that's very Aiden, though. Aiden builds furniture. He probably knows what.
Yeah, and he's like, why aren't you wearing shoes?
And nothing is going his way. And this is where we find out that Wyatt wouldn't get on the plane. And now I think this story is strangely told because it's Wyatt wouldn't get on the plane, but he does eventually get on the plane.
I would hope so, or else Wyatt saw some weird stuff, which would probably make why he's angry at his parents.
Yeah, it's a weird telling of the story that Kathy then sat in silence and then cried when they got back to the farm. And he says, don't feel sorry for me and go put some shoes on.
Yeah.
And now we're back in editing and we have the it's like you're inside my head. For the record, this woman is Edmonia Lewis. Her nickname was Wildfire. And she was the first African-American and Native American sculptor to achieve national and then international prominence, though mostly in Italy. And I was thinking about that with the woman that we saw in the last profile, who was the first African-American and Native American pilot, who also, I guess I'm just struck by the fact that in both cases, we have African-Americans / Native Americans who have to leave this country. They have to leave the United States in order to achieve their goals. And it's just the continual sad commentary on our history. Happy 4th of July. It just struck me and I felt like I wanted to mention it. And, you know, she says that he's so intuitive. And we find out here that his wife thinks he's clueless.
And then Herbert comes in.
And it feels so awkward and I don't know what's happening. And Herbert would like a minute. And in my mind, I'm like, Herbert can't be that mad about Marion being hot, but that's not what it is.
She says, this is my editor married.
She did just find out that he's married. So that, I guess that's where that does it, but it is a funny line. And yeah, we have a quick turn here because we find out that, you know, she had says that she turned off her phone because of Chauncey. And her father had a stroke and it's too late. He's gone. And this threw, I was like, whoa, like I got whiplash from this scene, not in a bad way, but like this is, I suppose, how things happen in real life.
No, it's not, because her father was dead in season one. There's a line in season one when Charlotte is talking to her and Lisa says, and I didn't know this on my own. This was investigative work that others have done, where Lisa says, I was the same way when my dad passed. My hands were shaking.
Oh, that's funny. I had totally forgotten about that.
And then he had risen from the dead for season two to attend the dinner party.
So she should really be grateful for any extra time that she got with him.
Yeah, is what I'm saying. But anyway, all of that aside, sometimes I choose to give writers a lot of leeway in the first season of a series because I think you're trying to figure out what works and what doesn't.
Sure.
So I'm just going to pretend that they were like, that doesn't count. Or maybe they were talking about Herbert's father and she just says, my dad. Who knows?
Maybe. And we get Lisa in her closet and she's sitting at her computers and then Charlotte's phone rings.
I know there are computers and I like that you said she's sitting at her computers.
I think it's funny because they're multiple. Yeah. Like that's why I actually wrote it down. And, you know, yeah, she says that her father died this afternoon and he was elderly, but the doctor said he was in amazing shape. And this is where we're going to start this thread of she never got to say goodbye because of work. Mm-hmm. And Charlotte, bless her, knowing immediately what to say in this situation was that it was work that he raised her to do. And the ability, like, that is such a blessed moment for Charlotte, I think.
Yeah, I said I would want to be comforted by Charlotte.
Yeah, it's very, very good. And Lisa's saying that she has to find a way to stop crying. And this gets us to an email from Lucille Highwater. And, you know, it reads, brothers, sisters, and friends of the Newark Free Theater, a great tree has fallen. Come celebrate the glorious life, Saturday, July 13th. And Great Tree is a Maya Angelou reference that she has a poem that I think is called Falling of the Great Tree, something like that. Now I'm misquoting it and I feel bad, but that I believe that that's a reference to Maya Angelou. And yeah, Lisa's saying this can't be happening. And this is the general manager of her father's theater is what we find out. Mm-hmm. Once again, they're not great at timelines. I don't know that this could be July 13th coming up if it's been 2 months since Carrie saw Aiden, but it's fine. We'll let some of this, we'll let some, but it does give us a little bit of wiggle room on us messing up about his kids. That's all.
And there's another timeline discrepancy that we'll get to. Well, not discrepancy. It's just pushing it a little bit that we'll get to at the end of the episode.
And now we have Charlotte going to Harry. And do you know how much I love you? And we now have the reversal where we're going to have Charlotte's kind of breaking down about it. And Harry just wants to watch the game.
And so does Richard Burton. If you notice, yes. Richard Burton is so glued in to this game.
And Harry sees what's happening here. He missed someone stealing home. And this is where we have the, you know, that's a game and this is life. And we have to be here for every moment. And it's that thing where, like, I get this philosophy, but we also sometimes just want to watch a game.
Yeah, and maybe Harry doesn't want to think about it all the time.
Fair point. And he wants his Pollyanna back, which I guess now we're referring to his beer, and there is a Pollyanna Brewing Company, which I guess is what that is. I had to look it up. I'm like, she's the Pollyanna, but now it was a confusing moment, but I think that's what we're doing here.
And Lily's boyfriend is also Polly.
Amorous. And sexual. Mm-hmm. And he loves her too, but he's not taking his eyes off this game again. And now we have Aiden scrolling old timey doors, is what I put. And Carrie put Shu in her room.
Well, that...
So Shu has a room?
I mean, I think there's so many rooms in that house. Yeah. Might as well give one to Shu. And that, I think, is a hint to Aiden that it's time for sex. But
yes.
He found some in Pennsylvania. And we find out Carrie actually does have an event at Tiffany's, which most people probably assumed, but I thought Charlotte was just this mastermind of getting Bitsy out of there. And Aiden says, you can't keep a plywood plug in there, talking about the window, or is he?
He is.
Oh, okay, he doesn't but have like, a plywood like plug in his butt.
No. And yeah, Carrie says that regular glass is fine. And the next morning she's calling for Aiden, but he's left a post-it because he clearly doesn't know her sensitive past with post-its.
Yeah, rude, Aiden.
She's having some post-it PTSD, some PTSD here.
And PIPTSD.
Something like that.
Pip-tits.
He's gone to Scranton. He'll be back later. And now we're back to the antacids.
Yeah, more Tums, which I'm trying to understand. Are they just talking about like aging and getting, is this why there's a Tums through line? Or are we going to find out later that Carrie has like a stomach issue? Is that going to be a storyline? Because I'm trying to pick up on this stuff now.
The mutton kicked off some crazy stomach condition.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. And now we are in Tiffany's and we find out that it has been 2 months since Aiden and Carrie have seen each other. They didn't do it last night. So we find out that putting Shu in her room was just animal cruelty.
Yes. And, you know, I've never been in Tiffany before, which I guess isn't surprising because why would I go in there? But it makes me want to, like, walk in the door at some point.
Well, they have a restaurant there now. So you and I could have breakfast at Tiffany's.
Actually have breakfast at Tiffany's.
I wonder if they have gluten-free options.
Let's check it out. Because I would like to go in. I'd like to, like, say that I've been in Tiffany's
before. Well, you can walk it. No one's going to stop you.
I know. I feel like they will, though. I feel like they'd be like, no.
It's on Fifth Avenue. It's such a touristy thing. You can go in.
I've walked by it many times. Yeah, I feel like they would reject me. And we have the, you know, the pebble throwing was a romantic gesture gone wrong. And she acknowledges that she made it worse, which did make me, I'm like, okay, Carrie had some self-awareness in that moment. That like she wasn't helping the situation. And everything's just so fragile. And this gets us to Charlotte mentioning Lisa's father. And it doesn't last long because then Bitsy arrives and she was invited, but it was in her spam. And this is when now Charlotte brings up another event.
The Townsend boat party. Which,
yeah.
Charlotte, just stop bringing up events.
Stop saying it. Stop bringing it up.
Julie Helston is having a rough time.
And there is a wooden boat festival in Port Townsend, but that's probably not what this is.
I hope it is.
And now we're at a diner and it's Jennifer Lewis.
It's Jennifer Lewis and we are at the Chelsea Square Diner on 368 West 23rd Street at 9th Avenue. Which, this isn't the same diner that Miranda and Che were at. That's the other Chelsea diner that's like metal on the outside.
I believe that that's right. I'd have to go back and look at it. It's funny because when they walked into this diner, I thought, oh, that's the Chelsea diner. But then they fooled me. I was like, oh, I guess maybe they went to Newark to film this or because they, you know, it's supposed to be in Newark. And the funny thing about this is that while this is actually the Chelsea Square diner, it's made to look like the pink teacup. which was a soul food restaurant in the West Village back in the day that then moved to Brooklyn. And I think it's no longer even in New York. I think there's a location in LA now. Mm-hmm. But it was just funny, like the multiple layers of what's happening in this restaurant. But I do want to talk about Jennifer Lewis really quickly, because at first I almost didn't know what to say because it's Jennifer Lewis and there's so much to say. I mean, I know her mostly from Black-ish, but like she was famously a harlot to Bette Midler. Like back in the day, I also think it's funny that she played Angela Bassett's mom in What's Love Got to Do with It, even though she's only 1 year older than Angela Bassett. That's kind of a little fun fact there.
She's been on Broadway.
Oh, she's done everything. Yeah. That's why I didn't know what to. I think I saw her in Hairspray. Like
she was a replacement for Motormouth Mabel, right?
That's my memory. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, super like she's just part of showbiz. Like she's just like a showbiz staple. It was really fun to see her be on this show. This character is a lot, but it's Jennifer Lewis, so it was written for Jennifer Lewis also, just for the record. The writer wrote this and sort of said like the double-edged sword of that is that like the voice was so clear, but then like you have to get Jennifer Lewis to do it, and thankfully they were able to get her.
And the diner I was thinking of was the Empire Diner, which is an avenue yes. over on 10th.
That makes sense. And yeah, they have to talk, but first she likes her purse, but I think it's mostly to show her purse that is a
Michael Kors.
Kors. Yeah.
And I wonder if this was intentional because Lisa, I don't know if that's an Hermes purse, but it looks like it could be an Hermes purse, which those are like $30,000. And like Michael Kors, even though it's a nice brand, like if I'm just going to Google that specific Michael Kors purse is probably around $100, $120. Like Michael Kors collection purses are probably much more, but like that specific purse is around $120. So it's like, it's a very nice purse, but to Lisa, it's probably not. But we find out that her father bought them for her. What I also liked about this was the waitress, Lubelle.
Yes.
I like that she knows Lisa. So that's like yes. some history
the
that we get there.
Relationship is so built in and it's very, very well played by everyone. The three of them all know each other. They all have a history. There's a moment where like Lubelle like snatches the menu out. Too many L's. I will say that. We need to change. We have a Lisa, a Lubelle, and a
Lucille.
Lucille. There's so many L's. But yeah, Lubelle like snatches the menu away from Lucille, which is great. It's just great. Like it's just like this built-in history between
right,
these
because
ladies.
I think when you first see Lisa walking in, you're kind of expecting her to be like, where am I? You know?
Right.
But then you realize, oh, she comes here all the time. And not only does she come here all the time, she's ordering chicken and waffles and she's asking for hot sauce. So these yes. are things that you're seeing Lisa in the world that she had with her father, as opposed to Lisa in the world that she has with her friends on the Upper East Side.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's sort of, you know, Lisa was somewhat taken aback. Why was it your invite? And I have the same thoughts here that like, I think it makes perfect sense that this theater is going to have some kind of event to honor this man. You do think that there's a world in which one would reach out to the daughter first to be like, hey, we really want to do this thing, but we're going to get there. We're going to get to how this happened. And finding out that Lisa has spent 20 years across from Lisa's father doing everything to keep his theater afloat. The writer of this episode also did give us in her mind the backstory, which is that Lucille and Lisa's father did have a fling back in the day, that Lisa's father left Lucille for Lisa's mom, and that after that relationship ended, I'm assuming because we're going with Lisa's mom maybe isn't with us anymore, but she might be in next season, so who knows,
yeah.
that like now there's been a bit of a rekindling. And Lucille is sort of referred to as the widow who never married.
Mm.
And that all that she would have is perhaps this theater now. That like that's all that she has to hold on to. And I said, the food comes very fast.
And it looks delicious.
It does look amazing. There's one spot in New York that does gluten-free fried chicken and waffles, and I've never actually had it there, but I do feel like I need to go at some point.
Friedman's? Is that
yep.
it? Yeah, no, the reason I made the comment about the chicken and the waffles and the hot sauce is like, you see Lisa's casualty with how she orders it, where she's just yeah. like, I'm going to get that. You know what it is. Oh, can I get yeah. the hot? Like the way that when you go to we used to go to Hell's Kitchen and you'd be like, can I get, like, you know it, exactly what sauces they have, what they think,
yeah.
which I was just taken aback by because I thought this was Lisa's first time entering this establishment.
And this is where we find out that the Michael Kors was maybe a gift from Lisa's dad.
Yeah. Also really important is we have Lucille talking about working with her dad for 20 years.
Yeah.
And that Lisa was, the reason why Lisa wasn't asked is because she was always too busy, her dad said. And Lisa says she's not too busy for this. And this is news to me. And I bring this up because it's really important, because I think there are those these people in our lives that we feel we're so close to, whether it be blood or we've known them for years, and they have other families.
Yes.
And we're going to get to it more at the end.
Right.
But it was just that moment really took me when she said, not for this. I don't know.
And now we're at lunch in a cafe with the dogs. So this is the same restaurant as the last episode.
Yes.
That's in Gramercy Park, but we're just outside as opposed to inside.
Yep. And they're about to meet Brady. And she explains that the way Miranda is with the dogs, Joy does, is Joy is with kids, which is why she hasn't had a girlfriend with a child. Does she know how old Brady is? Yeah, does she think she's about to meet like a 10-year-old?
Toddler's about to like...
Like a toddler's going to roll up on his tricycle. Like, hey.
I wrote that he does not ride up on his bike, which is kind of disappointing.
No, but he's like, Mom, you hate eating outside.
Which is... a new development.
Yeah.
We definitely had many instances of Miranda eating outside, but it could be a very me thing. That when I first moved to New York, it's a very New York thing to like sit on a sidewalk and eat. And now I don't get it at all. Now I never want to eat outside. But
no.
So Miranda and I have both changed, I guess, as far as that goes. And she has her reasons, which are the dogs. And I do like that he asks permission to pet, which
me
is
too.
What you're supposed to do with a dog.
I said, hey, look at these guys. Can I pet them? Polite, Brady. Yeah. So now Joy is off the fence with Brady because Brady likes... her dogs.
And then, yeah, we're back at the diner. And can you think of a better place to celebrate his glorious life than his own theater? And Daddy would love it. The key lime has seen better days.
Yeah. Yeah. Lisa and Lucille seem to be agreeing yet disagreeing. Lisa knows it's what her dad would want, but I feel like she's fighting it and fighting everything because she feels bad. She feels bad that she wasn't there.
Yeah, and you have a lot of opinions, and then she does go too far. Lucille goes too far with the, you know, you weren't there when he died, which we know that Lisa's already feeling guilty about, and asking for the check as Lucille realizes that she's crossed the line. Just all she has is the theater and the memory of this man.
In a way, it reminds me a little bit of LTW with the previous editor, Grace. Not in like a, just in the sense of there's a lot of people in Lisa's life that are doing things and like sacrificing part of their own life for things that are important to her.
Yeah. And in the end, she just wants it to be simple and respectful. And we end with a quick, you know, Lucille saying, so I'm in.
Yeah.
And then back at Carrie's, Aiden has a lot of doors.
Yeah. Aiden is just sitting in a chair staring at doors. He doesn't think any of them could work because they don't have a rainbow because he ruined it. And in Pride Month.
And, you know, her thing of like, come here closer, stop acting weird, and that she shouldn't have mentioned the rainbow. And this gets us really quickly to he slept with Kathy, hopefully after Wyatt got on the plane.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, wait, did Wyatt get on the plane? Or is this just a weird thing that you're making Wyatt watch? Also, we never discuss like, is Kathy going to talk to her boyfriend? Because he just sits at the piano drinking bourbon.
Yeah, we both agreed it was a mistake. It will never happen again. And she kind of understands, or maybe she's in shock. And I have a lot of thoughts about this conversation, and they get to most of it. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, Carrie gets over it fairly quickly as far as understanding how this could happen. I don't know that I would get over it quite so quickly.
Well, a few things. I think Carrie gets over it. I think she understands because I kind of understand, like, in that moment when you have that history with this person and you're so upset over the same thing and no one else understands it. I can see how that would happen. I'm not justifying it, but I can see how it would happen. I think Carrie's also thinking back to when she cheated on Aiden.
Sure.
I think there's that where she's like, listen, I have literally had these feelings with someone else when I was with you. I think the big thing is, though, her saying it's not what she agreed to. What did I agree to? You thought I'd wait for 5 years. And you realize this isn't about them having an open relationship. This isn't her saying, like, I'm going to have sex with someone else. It's more about her realizing and finally saying to him, this isn't doable. Like, what we're doing right here is not practical, and we didn't have this conversation. Like, it's our fault for not talking about this sooner and just thinking, like, it'll figure itself out.
Right. Because to me, the key sentence is her saying that she's having a harder time understanding why they haven't had this conversation until now. And that is the point. And I think that's such a great point. And even, you know, her thing of like, did you expect me to not sleep with anyone for 5 years? And him being like, yes. And her saying like, well, you thought that was the thing and even you couldn't do it.
Right.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a good scene. I'm not criticizing the scene at all. I just think it's an interesting way to get there. And we do then cut to them in bed together.
And Kathy and Wyatt are in the bedroom.
Yeah. Just and Shu.
And Shu and the dogs. And Brady just rolling by. Hey, guys. Yeah.
And Lisa, we have Lisa's family leaving their place as Amazing Grace Place. And we probably knew that they were at 983 Park Avenue. This is at 83rd Street. But it did then inspire me because I wasn't sure if we probably also already knew because she's lived there forever that Charlotte does live just down the street. She's at 930 Park Avenue near 81st Street. So that's a fun little like close little commute there for the two of them.
And me.
Yeah, you can go over anytime you want. And Madonna.
Yeah, they're leaving for the funeral. Herbert's mother is there.
Yes.
And does Lisa gets in a different car than everyone else?
It's more than one car for sure. I don't know how many it is or who's riding in what, but we have more than one car going. And we get to the theater and we have an urn and Lucille asks if she approves and gets the program out of another Michael Kors because she has several.
Mm-hmm. And she lets Lisa know she has 3 minutes to give her speech. She's second to last. And Lisa says 3 minutes. And she says something that I agree with, that Lisa's father always said that no one ever complained about getting out of the theater early. And this is something we're seeing people in this room that may have known her father better than she did in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And it's common when a loved one dies who you may have been distant from. And it reminds me of two things. It reminds me of a memorial service I just recently attended where it was someone who lived in New York City, who passed away and who was very prominent in the theater world. And his memorial was at a theater with a lot of performances. And that's exactly what he would have wanted. And the only performers that were performing were people that he would have wanted to be there. And his family was there. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you're kind of learning about your loved one and a lot of their life from their memorial, which I think happens a lot, especially in the queer community, which also reminded me of the documentary that we both just saw, I'm Your Venus, which was about Venus Extravaganza from Paris is Burning. And it's where her brothers are trying to help solve the crime of her murder, but they also bring on members of her chosen family, the Extravaganza house. And so, I don't know, it just kind of reminded me of all that. And even though her father was a straight man, he was this theater person who had this other artistic family.
Yeah, and we get Eunice, who has met all of Newark in the lobby, and can you seat yourself so we can get started? And Herbert saying, like, she means well. And I like Lisa's response of, no, she doesn't, but her digs are strangely comforting, which I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and Seema shows up. Everyone shows up, but Seema shows up and had to take the train, which was... I could imagine Seema having a rough time navigating New Jersey Transit.
Yeah, I can see that as well. And is it not like Carrie to be late?
I don't know. I feel like Carrie would be late.
Yeah, I don't think it's that odd that Carrie's late.
I don't think it's something we have to talk about, basically.
And we get Aiden in ill-fitting clothes. And I'm just going to say this. It's not for any major point, but there actually is still a big and tall shop on 21st Street. Like, that still does exist. And in fact, it's the Castro convertibles that have all closed. But I just thought it was funny.
And how tall is John Corbett?
6'3 as well. I think that he's the same height. They keep saying 6'5 in the writer's room, but I think it's 6'3.
And he shows up in a very tiny suit. And then we and we sit down and Miranda lets Seema know she's going to take the $150 over asking price because it will bring her more joy. And this is a little bit of a timeline thing because this event is on Saturday and Miranda needed to know by 5 p.m. on Friday. So hopefully it's still available, which it probably won't be in New York real estate.
She missed her window. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote, she says it'll bring her more joy. Get it?
And then Aiden's pants rip.
Yeah. And he can see his big and tall. I'm like, Aiden, it's okay if someone else calls it that.
Yeah. Well, Anthony liked it. He kind of looks over, but he doesn't. He's like, what's going on?
And then magic to do starts up and we have a Kiss of the Spider-Woman headpiece.
I want this funeral. I want someone to open up like, do, 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 join us. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Pippin funeral.
All that we get is like the last moment of some production where it's just a group of women all in bright, colorful outfits that just go, love.
Yeah.
And I want the whole number.
I
want to know what happened. I want to know all of it.
Does she announce what it was
amazing.
Or no?
No, it's just that's all we get. I think they did film more. I think that it's actually a thing they filmed all of. Because then they also refer to them as the new Free Theater's post office players. They delivered. And I have questions about this theater because apparently it's supposed to be just like a community theater.
Yeah, a free theater.
So like these are just people that actually work at the post office that like formed this little group that performed. I don't know. I'm fascinated by all of it.
I think the free theater is free to perform at and maybe even free to attend.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious about it. And now it's Lisa's turn and she asks Herbert to go up with her. And we have a moment with Eunice asking to switch places with Henry because she can't see a thing sitting behind Miss Coretta Scott King styled by Liberace. And it's I feel like we had this exact moment with Anthony some time ago where it's like, I can hear you. I meant you to. And it's a very similar thing that happens here.
Yeah. And you see in Lisa's hand, these note cards. So you see that she's written this long, elaborate speech. And then she gets up there and she just can't. And she says over and over again, she wasn't there, but she can't speak. And she has Herbert take over, who does a great job. He's going to be a good comptroller.
Yeah. And I'm going to once again call it out a tiny bit because I think there's a better way to get here. I wish that something had been like she had forgotten her notes or like because it doesn't make any sense to me that she's standing up there with notes in her hands, but sort of rambling about not having been there. I'm like, just go to the notes, girl. Like, just read your notes. But, and I excuse it because it's going to get us to a great place. Like, I'm not really calling it out. I'm just saying I think that there was a slightly less sweaty way to get
there. See, what I understood it as is she was second to last. So she has sat through, you know, I'm thinking about it myself. Like, imagine if I were to go to my father's funeral and I was present in his life. This isn't true, but I was present in his life, but not as present as I could have been in a lot of ways. And he had this group of people for this thing he's created that I never realized was so wonderful. And I've just sat through 2 hours of them performing and talking about him. And I have these note cards that just feel almost performative at that point.
And then I wish we had a mention of that because I also accept that. And I accept
like
it
she could have gone up there and even said all of that.
Or gone up there and said like, these don't seem to make sense to me anymore. Something, I just needed there to be a reason. I needed them to give us a reason why she's not just reading from her notes. That said, we will now get to me crying because this next scene is very, very powerful to me, where we have Eunice saying, if you're not there by your loved one's side when they pass, it means their spirit doesn't want you there. They want you to remember them the way they were, not in their final hour. I'm going to try to speak. Because I spent 2 days by my mom's side trying to help her go. And it was two excruciatingly long, incredibly beautiful days. But she didn't go until we left. You know, we were there on the second day until probably almost 11 o'clock at night. And if I'm being totally honest, it was almost my doing that we left because I didn't know what else to say. I didn't know what else to do. And then she passed about 4 hours later. You know, we got notified in the middle of the night that they had come in to check on her and that she had passed away. And I think that you're allowed to tell yourself whatever you need to in these moments to get through them. So maybe I'm making this up, but I truly believe that my mom wanted me to be there to say goodbye, but then needed us to go so that she could go. Mm. That she needed us, she needed to be alone to actually leave this world or this plane. And I don't know if that's true or not. It could be a thing that I just tell myself, but yeah, I clearly I reacted quite a bit to this scene. It's a beautiful scene.
I think it's true. And so does Eunice.
Thank you, Eunice. And thank you, Elise. And I do like that we have them and have like, you know, the Belgian lace launderette by hand. Mm-hmm. We do have to sort of cut these scenes, I think, a little bit. And it's very well played.
And then we have Aiden and Carrie because they have to leave last. And he says, you stay close. And she says, always.
And I guess this is a mirror of a scene from Bringing Up Baby, which is a movie that I don't know. But I guess this is sort of directly taken from that. And then we get the voiceover of, despite the shatter, the woman knew the break wasn't fatal. And I'm a little bit convinced that these next two scenes happened in different orders.
Right, because this feels like it should be the end.
So in many ways, this feels out of order. And I get why it happens the order that it has. But even just at her place, him telling her to sleep, he'll call her when he's home, and her saying, "You are home," which I'm always like, mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. And then Aiden pouring coffee into a not-to-go cup as Duncan climbs the stairs, and it's open, and sorry to intrude so early, he keeps night hours, which he doesn't. And Aiden will make sure that she gets it, and then Carrie getting up and seeing it on her table, not knowing why it's there. That feels a very strange order for those events to happen.
So I think my version is that he's not planning on going back upstairs. So he just leaves the bedroom and is saying goodbye to her. He plans to go downstairs, pour himself a quick cup of coffee, and then head out. That's what I planned. And then Carrie's confusion, I don't think is because how did it get here? I think it's more her realizing, oh, Aiden met Duncan.
Sure.
I think it's like,
I accept all of that. Okay. I just think it's an interesting order for things to happen. And then absolutely that feels like the end of the episode.
But she needs to get more Tums.
Yes. And we're buying more Tums and sees Charlotte with Depends. And I wrote, she and I both lose it. I have watched this episode 3 times. I always watch 3 times before I record. I cried all 3 times. This scene is so deeply effective. And Kristen Davis's performance, holy moly.
Harry has prostate cancer. He doesn't want anyone to know or to find out. So that's why I'm all the way down here. And please forget that I told you. I'm only telling you because you're so the depend. Honey, here, sweetie, look at me. You tell me anything, all right? Any thought, big or small, I will not tell a soul. I promise I'm your vault. They found her early, but I can't stop thinking that he's gonna die. That's why I've been such a mess.
And I forget that Big died over and over again until like these moments when I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, Carrie's been through this.
Yeah. And it's just incredible acting. It's so beautifully and made all the more beautiful by its not beautiful setting that it's, you know, we're in this drugstore, brightly lit, you know, I just think it's so deeply effective. It's an incredibly good scene. I think it's a really, really strong ending to this episode.
Well, I couldn't help but wonder, and I kind of have an answer for it, but I couldn't help but wonder why they haven't thought about things they've already written when it comes to like certain timeline things. But I couldn't help but wonder if maybe the writer's room's just like, we got it wrong on the first 2 seasons. Let's just start over. Anything we said before isn't real. Like, do you think they're like, Che era doesn't exist?
Yeah, that was all a dream. Mm-hmm. I mean, you brought up mine already. My couldn't help but wonder is I can't help but wonder what that conversation between Kathy and boyfriend Bob was.
Yeah. Do you think boyfriend Bob's like, with his whiskey, like, not my place to get into it, Kathy? Yeah. She's like, no, I cheated on you. He's like,
I don't want to play this game.
I don't want to get into it. It's not my family. She's like,
I don't have opinions.
I don't have opinions. Can't talk about it.
Yeah. And then, you know, every week I say we'll be back next week. And I'm, you know, on the writer's room, he does tell us the name of the next episode. And I believe the name of this next week's episode is going to be called They Just Want to Have Fun. So we'll see exactly how that pans out. But we'll be back next week with They Just Want to Have Fun, I think is the name of the title.
Also, do you think Homer was like, this is my chance? Dad is like back with mom and I can get with Carrie.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. Back next week.
Bye.
Bye. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation. You can listen to my other podcast, Mike and Vanya Can't Not, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love it if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link, or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. As always, take care of yourself, and let's take care of each other.
Well, and I also think they're still
They still have incontinence.
There's still inconsistency.
Long-term erectile dysfunction. function, which I wrote era tile discussion.
Let's talk about those era tiles. Are those like Taylor Swift tiles?
Yes. I also like it's a very nice purse.
And?
It's my own Michael Kors.
And?
That's all.
Okay. Well, if you're going to start the Into the Woods reference, have to finish it. There's a pigeon staring at me. I don't know. I feel like Carrie would be late.
Yeah, I don't think it's that odd that Carrie's late.
I mean, I don't think it's something we have to talk about.